On this episode of Doctor Who Podchuck, we interview Annika Wills, who played Polly, a companion going back to the first Doctor who witnesses the first regeneration of the Doctor. David Tennant recalls our own Tara Wheeler on Absolute Radio. Plus, news, announcements, and your feedback, all that and more on this episode of Doctor Who Podchuck. The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy, and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This episode brought to you by Podchuck supporting subscribers. Go to arttrap.com/podchucksupporter to become a supporting subscriber. Support the show and get extra content. This episode also brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Over 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player. This episode is also supported by the Podchuck Podcast Companion app for the iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch, now available in the iTunes App Store.
Live from the Chameleon Tours booking desk, this is Doctor Who Podchuck.
Doctor Who Podchuck.
Okay, well, let's do it.
No, I...
whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Lewis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you? And who are you? Who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy in its 25th year presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 224. My name is Ken Deep, alongside Mr. Lewis Trapani.
Good morning, Gallifrey.
And across the great pond, none other than the mad scientist himself, Mr. James Naughton.
Good evening, Earth.
And we have got a jam-packed show for you today. A bunch of announcements, lots of things going on, things popping up in the convention and appearance scene. We have the loss of one of Doctor Who's writers from the classic era, as well as a soundtrack. Some soundtrack information. We have an interview coming up later on in the show with Annika Wills, who played Polly in the late in the William Hartnell era, early in the Patrick Troughton era. So that's a lot of fun. That reaches back into the satchel from Gallifrey, from some of our archived interviews, and a whole bunch more. Your feedback and lots of other things. But the main announcement, the one you've all been waiting for, as they say in the grand world of announcing, the Gallifreyan Embassy 25th anniversary celebration. We mentioned it in the last podcast. That's taking place on Tuesday, November 16th, 2010, at 7 p.m. in the evening at Eleanor Rigby's in Mineola, New York. Has its first guest announced, a very special guest joining us at our celebration event for old friends and new friends alike, and anybody who wants to come down, will be none other than the lovely and beautiful Miss Daphne Ashbrook. She's a longtime friend of the show, and she is joining us.
Hell yeah.
On the heels of the announcement of the TV movie, the 1996 movie, coming to DVD in North America. So this is perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect.
And if we really want to be coy, we'll tell the Star Trek fans that she played Melora in Deep Space Nine. We'll get a few of them to come down.
Everybody's happy.
And then there's a few Knight Rider fans out there, too.
A few Knight Rider fans, maybe an A-Team fan. They were hot this year, and she was on the A-Team. So that should be a lot of fun. It is...
Well, if I'm not mistaken, isn't the 1996 movie coming out on DVD in the UK that month?
It's already out in the UK, I believe.
No, but it's
being
revisiting.
Yeah, I think the revisiting is indeed, yes.
So that's fantastic. We won't be able to play that unless I bring my Region 2 player, but... well, one of the things that... And this isn't finalized, so you guys keep this on the down low. I'll let you know.
No one tell anyone.
she has a CD coming out.
Does she?
She sings. And we played a track from it a few shows ago. It's called Grace Notes. And if all goes well, if everything goes well with them pressing it up and doing all the stuff that, that goes on when you put out an album, this event might also double as her CD release party.
Wow.
And it's fantastic.
It's like a triple whammy of
the triple Lindy goodness. Right there. Yes. No one can do the triple Lindy. It's too dangerous.
Daphne's giving it a go.
So this is Tuesday, November 16th at Eleanor Rigby's, which is a Beatles themed restaurant in Mineola. It's only two blocks from the Mineola Long Island Railroad Station. So if you are a person who likes to use public transportation, there's the bus in Nassau County as well as the railroad. And there's plenty of municipal parking behind the restaurant. It's fantastic. It's a small group. It's going to be a small gathering. And tickets, by the time this podcast go out, you'll have to look on the Gallifreyan Embassy website and see when Lewis puts the information up. Your chance to grab a ticket to the event is a very limited group. It's not a very big place, so your chance, jump on board early, come on down, let's celebrate Podshock's 5th anniversary and the Gallifreyan Embassy's 25th anniversary. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it'll be a virtual ticket in a sense, because you'll get on it the list to be attendant, you know, guest list.
Through PayPal, Lewis?
Yeah, so you can pay through major credit cards via PayPal, but just to be clear, there won't be a physical ticket.
You won't have the hard ticket. You'll have your name on the list.
Added to the list of attendees.
Fantastic. New York Comic Con, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, October 8th, 9th, and 10th. And Lewis and I on Sunday afternoon will be recording a Podshock. Most likely, we're scheduled for 4 p.m. right now. But if not, we'll still be on. Look for us on the schedule for Doctor Who Podshock. Lewis and I will be there. Lots of exciting stuff. It's good time.
Yes, good times indeed. Joining us on our live show at New York Comic Con is Mr. Tony Lee. You may know Tony Lee from IDW's publishing Doctor Who ongoing comic book series, as well as writing for Doctor Who, the Forgotten comic book as well, also by IDW. So that's at our live show, 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. at New York Comic Con. That's at the Jacob Javits Center in New York City, and it's in room 1A15. But check the schedule for any last minute changes. That's again 4 p.m. Sunday, October 10th, 2010. That's 10-10-10. So it was a radio station around here called 1010 Winds. Now that reminds me of that. But that's another matter altogether, because we will be winning. It's Doctor Who Podshock wins at New York Comic Con 10-10-10 at 4 p.m. As you can tell, I'm just drunken with excitement.
He's doing his part to reduce sobriety worldwide.
Thank goodness. It's a very important job. We all have to do our part.
And I should not forget to mention that Sarah Douglas, friend of the show Sarah Douglas, and voice from the Doctor Who Adventure Games, will also be at New York Comic Con, as well as a ton of other people, from Gil Gerard to William Catt and Katie Sackhoff and Tricia Helfer. And, you know, whatever your bag is, whatever sci-fi you like, there's chances are there's somebody that's going to be there. It's at the Javits Center in New York. It's a lot of fun.
The website is, isn't it nycc.com, I'm guessing?
Okay.
I don't know.
Let me check. I believe you.
I'm sure if you Google New York Comic Con, yeah, it's sure going to come up. So that should be a
NYCC,
good time.
NYCC, interestingly, is New York Copy Center. So,
So if you have photocopying needs, come down to.
It's like I was thrilled the other day, and I'm going to just say this because it's
I'm
mental.
Sorry, it's spelled out. It's NewYorkComicCon.com is the URL for it.
Well, if you have Lewis's accent, you might type it in YAWK, but it's actually YORK. Because I think you said it York.
New York Comic Con.
I'm jesting, of course, with Lewis. Any second out, James is going to pick up Odd Couple music. This is a lot of fun going on here. We have New York Comic Con, then we have our anniversary event, and then Chicago TARDIS is 2 weeks after that. It's over Thanksgiving weekend in Lombard, Illinois, where I'll be going. I'll be the PodShock rep at Chicago TARDIS this year. And so it's, if you're a Doctor Who fan, the next couple months there's a bunch of cool events, whether it's here in New York for two, or one in Chicago. A couple of cool events, few cool events, and we couldn't be more excited. If you're a Doctor Who fan and you're in one of those two areas, you've got some stuff to go to, which is fantastic. And Doctor Who fandom alive and well.
Let's hope, yes.
No, you don't think so?
No, well, I just thought it was a given.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Lewis made me nervous there for a second. Like, does he know something I don't? Yes, Doctor Who fans are fleeing New York right now.
The Daleks are invading.
The Daleks are in Manhattan and they're running.
It happens every February. They all flee to Los Angeles.
To warmer climes, as they say. Yeah. I keep thinking, just as a heads up, our friends in New England Fan Experience have postponed their event in mid-November, the one they do in Boston.
It's a shame. They always have a Doctor Who guest, so it's...
Yeah, and they've just, due to some issues which you can read about on their website, they've had to postpone it and back it off till 2011. So I would just say they're probably just skipping a year and maybe doing whatever they need to do to bounce back healthy and strong. So that's just for those who were thinking about doing a travel situation to Boston, which Lewis and I always talk about every year.
Well, unless you live in Boston, then that's not.
Well, yeah, no, then it's a piece of cake. But they are they'll be back in 2011, according to their website. So that's cool. And Paul and Deborah and everybody at New England Fan Experience always welcomes us with open arms. So we want them to bounce back strong in 2011 and come back with a major super-dy duper convention.
Yeah, we had some good times there in the past.
And like Lewis says, they always support a Doctor Who guest, in the lean years they had them. So
because they've been going on for a good almost 20
years.
Years.
Yeah,
if not 20 now, yeah.
Okay, so we have we've covered some of the announcements with the event wise. We have a couple of things coming up news wise. I just read that the Series 5 soundtrack was announced, which I know they announced a soundtrack for the specials, and it kind of had me bummed a little bit because I'm like, well, geez, you know, we just watched all this Matt Smith stuff, and now we're musically, sonically, we're getting dragged back to the specials. But they've announced that the soundtrack is going to be released as well, and that's in...
Okay, so it's just November? Is there...
It's the 8th of November 8th, in UK.
The 8th of November, the Series 5 soundtrack from Murray Gold will be coming to CD.
Murray's back in the UK right now in studio, and I don't know. I can speculate that maybe he's, since they're in production with new Doctor Who stories...
Maybe the Christmas special?
Yeah, that's what
they've already... done the Christmas special, they've rapped on it, so it's perfectly possible that he's composing the music for it. Yeah.
Did you see this still? They're doing a night shoot. This will be very light on spoilers. If me telling you Doctor Who's doing a night shoot is a spoiler, shoot me. I mean, really.
And there's a police phone box in it.
Yeah,
there's a TARDIS there as well. Yeah,
it's like a quarry shot or something with the TARDIS and some people standing around it. But James, where was that?
It's in a little village called Taftswell. It would appear this information has materialized, so called because a derogatory term for Welsh people in general, but particularly people from South Wales. Is the Tafts or Tafts because of the River Taff, which is a major river which runs through South Wales. And sure enough, the village itself is situated on the River Taff. They filmed quite a few different bits and bobs there. Most famously, the Englishman who went up a hill but came down a mountain with Hugh Grant and Col Meany was even in it, actually. DS9, Chief O'Brien, among many other stars. So, yeah, and it's not far from Cardiff at all, so it's not surprising that they choose to film it there.
Cool. Well, yeah, I mean, there's really nothing else to say other than they were spotted and a photograph was taken of them doing this night shoot.
It looks interesting, though. Lots of fire and light, despite...
Some kind of columns in there.
Mm. And I'm wondering if there's loads of people in fluorescent jackets, and I wonder if they're the production crew or whether that's
part of the
actors,
scene.
Part of the scene. I guess time will tell.
Mm. Cool.
Yeah.
It's always great when you know that they're shooting. Because that,
yes.
You know, it's like almost confirmation. Like, no, really, there'll be more Doctor Who coming your way.
There is going to be a sixth season, don't you worry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been trying to avoid any spoilers that are out there, but I know there's been some talk that that Stephen Moffat's been saying about the upcoming Christmas special, how it is going to be very Christmassy and Halloween oriented, and it's from what he's saying, it sounds like it's going to be the most Christmas oriented Christmas special. Yeah,
you know, and it's funny because there are some people who consider that a spoiler, and calling the Christmas special very Christmassy doesn't really. It's like, hey, they're calling the show Doctor Who this year. I mean, really, at what point do we just not get crazy with this stuff? Matt Smith is playing the Doctor this year. I don't know if you heard that. Shh, don't tell anybody.
And Karen Gillan as well is going to play the companion. Have you seen the spoiler photos of them in costume?
She has red hair.
Very sexy.
In some sad news, the writer Lewis Marks passed away at the age of 82. Back on September 17th, so it was a couple weeks, and the news finally made its way. It was on Gallifrey Pace this week. He wrote Day of the Daleks and one of the Hartnells, I think, too, right? I know Day of the Daleks is always a fave of mine.
I think he wrote, if I'm remembering rightly, I'm just trying to rack my brains, he wrote Day of the Daleks, which you just said, Planet of Evil, and didn't he write Mask of Mandragora? Yeah, something like that. I don't know if he...
Just so you know, the three of us are recording right now, and none of us have his wiki or IMDb page.
Well, that's what I'm looking at right now.
Planet
of the Giants.
There you go.
Planet of the Giants, yes.
Yes, yeah.
Which also, that one, I think, introduced us to Douglas Camfield as a director. I think that might have been his first...
His first
foray in Doctor Who. So.
Doctor Who world. Mm. But it is very sad, and it seems that... week after week we're reporting people who have sadly passed, legends in the Doctor Who world.
Well, he wasn't just a writer too. He was not on Doctor Who, but he was a producer as well. He has a long list of production credits,
yeah, among many other different and varied things.
Yeah, and to quote the great American philosopher Louis Trapani, I wish these people would stop dying.
It's very rude of everyone to keep dying like this.
I know. It's awful. They should stop. They should just stay our heroes forever and live
forever. It's just when you stop and you think about how long the show has been on, it's something that's, you know.
And the sheer amount of people as well who will have worked on it throughout its 40-year history in some way, 45-year history.
Yeah, long-time listeners will know that, you know, I don't make any secret about my mission in interviewing people. Priority one is always to get people who work the furthest back, if entirely possible, to document their stories and hear from them firsthand about those days. Not that the current people aren't important. They certainly are, but...
But we're just losing so many resources from the past that...
Absolutely, and
like the tree branches are being, you know, trimmed and, you know...
I'm being whittled away piece by piece.
Yes.
Great chunks of my past detaching themselves like melting icebergs.
Where did I hear that before?
Hey, Hey-ho.
So that's now, what else do we have? We're talking about the Doctor Who Podshock companion iPhone app.
Yes.
I know, and Lewis wanted to mention something about that, and I just rang a bell. So,
well, we spoke about it last time. We also did an aftershock on it as well, but we just want to remind people that there's a Doctor Who Podshock companion app available for the iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad. And I know we've been getting several requests, and I know we mentioned it before about other platforms too, and we're always open to that idea. But just to give you a recap of what it's about, it's basically a app that obviously runs on those devices that I just mentioned, and in it you can access all our episodes that are available, as well as access news that's going on our website. You can also see our Twitter feed, and then we have exclusives that we will record. It won't just only be, you know, recordings. It could be other things as well. I know Ken had mentioned convention related material that might appear there, so that's a possibility. So yeah, it's just a way to support the show, really. So it's $2.99 in the Apple iTunes App Store right now, and it, as I said, it's a way to help support the show.
And £1.79 if you're in Britain.
Thank you.
There you go. Yeah. A bargain, a veritable bargain.
Yeah, and we've done our first exclusive, or what are we calling that?
Yeah, it's in the exclusive section. It's basically a welcome message and thank you for helping support
for downloading
the show, you know, via the purchase of the app. But that's just an example of what will be there in the future. Let's say, for example, at the upcoming New York Comic Con, and we have a opportunity to record something outside of the show. So it's pretty cool. It's available now, and there's also other enhancements and features that will appear in the app in the future, you know,
as
future
we update releases. Yeah. And it doesn't just work with iPhones, it's iPod Touches, iPads.
Yeah, it's a universal app, so it will appear in the native resolution on the iPad. For those that don't have iPads, if you can run any iPhone app on the iPad, but it will run in the screen size of an iPhone unless you double up the resolution, and that's fine. But for when it comes to text-based stuff, when you double up the text, it gets a little choppy. But with if anything that's native to or anything that's a universal or native iPad app will be running in the native resolution for the iPad, and that's what this does. And it's not two separate apps, so you don't have to buy it over again.
When you buy it, and you have an iPhone and an iPad, yes. Will it work on both?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, so it's like you're getting...
It runs on both.
Double whammy.
It runs in a native resolution on both.
People have requested like a Droid app. Does that require a separate developer? Yes. Like you have to do something? So we did a call out for an iPhone app. We'll do a call out for Droid developers.
Well, just to be clear, it's Android. Droid is just one device that runs Android, which is the OS.
Okay.
So yeah, actually, there's Android, there's BlackBerry, there's now Windows 7 is coming.
If you're a developer, get in touch with us, whatever you develop for.
Android is a copyright of Lucasfilm Limited.
It is. they actually had to get consent, and it actually says on any advertising or promotions that they do, they'll have the copyright notice to Lucasfilm.
Well, heavens. If they're going to pay Lucasfilm anyway, you should be able to hear R2-D2 when you turn it on.
There's a new R2-D2 Droid coming out. It's a Verizon phone. It's coming out very, very soon. There's, if you watch my Twitter feed, I've been tweeting about it as well. So
we've suddenly turned into the Force cast.
Yes. Well,
well, it's been a really slow news week in the Doctor Who world.
It must have been. If we're talking about the Android R2-D2 thing.
You do know what this means, slow news week-wise, that tomorrow there's going to be a whole host of breaking news, and we're going to get scooped by everybody else just because we recorded the night before. Well, hey-ho.
We did talk about Doctor Who tech a couple episodes ago. You know, there's the new Sonic, there's the Nintendo games, there's the Sonic screwdriver, Nintendo Wii remote controller and stylus, and for the DS. So there's not a phone yet, but give it time.
Give it time. Although on my phone at the moment, because I'm a bit of a nerd, really, I have the TARDIS as my lock screen. And then as the home screen, it's the interior of the TARDIS. I thought that was really cool. So I can almost pretend like I'm walking into the TARDIS when I'm using my phone. How sad am I?
You are a geek, James. This is coming from a guy who has the Eighth Doctor and Grace as his wallpaper. So
takes one to know one.
Yes, it does. It certainly does.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps it up for news. So we'll be right back after these important messages.
This is Annika Wills, and you are listening to Doctor Who Podshock.
And you're listening to Doctor Who Podshock in part due to the support of Podshock supporting subscribers. This episode of Doctor Who Podshock is made possible in part by ongoing support from Podshock supporting subscribers. The only way we can bring you live shows like the one that we're going to be doing on Sunday at New York Comic Con, or the one in February at Gallifrey 1 or Gallifrey 22 as it is for next year, is through your support. If you enjoy Doctor Who Podshock and you would like it to continue, and now more than ever, please consider becoming a supporting subscriber. Remember, for a low monthly subscription fee, just as a show of support, not only will you be helping us continue and grow the show, but you'll get extra content as well. We just came out with a Doctor Who Podshock Extra Edition, episode 223, that just came out a couple days before this episode. We also show our appreciation with occasional giveaways and discounts. We're doing a special discount for the 25th anniversary of the Gallifreyan Embassy coming next month. You'll get 20% off the cover price. So that's another benefit there. An email newsletter and more that we, whatever we can do to show our appreciation to Podshock supporting subscribers. So to become one, simply go to GallifreyanEmbassy.org or Podshock.net and click on the Podshock supporting subscriber banner up there on the top there. If you are already a Podshock supporting subscriber, as always, thank you. Your continued support does make a difference. It really does. And welcome back to Doctor Who Podshock. Now, before we go into the past for our interview with Annika Wells, we're going to go into the future, or perhaps the present, or your past, but as it concerns the rest of this podcast, the future, because this is being recorded in post-production after the rest of the show was already recorded. So I just wanted to put this insert here, because last night I was with our Doctor Who Podshock correspondent, Tara Wheeler. She was on the radio in the UK while she was in the US. I know, holy crossover, Batman. But she was on Absolute Radio in the UK. She was on the Christian O'Connell Breakfast Show, and she was speaking about her time with David Tennant when she had worked on an extra for Fright Night, the film Fright Night, that's coming up next year, next October, starring David Tennant. You may recall her on our show talking about her experiences tracking down David Tennant and working as an extra in that film in Doctor Who Podshock episode 222. That's just a couple episodes ago. So if you haven't heard Doctor Who Podshock episode 222, go back and listen to it now. And, well, you don't have to, but not right now. You could do it later. You listen to this podcast right now, so don't do it now. But sometime, if you haven't heard it yet, listen to it. She happened to tweet me last night about David Tennant being on the radio, and I'm not going to go into the whole long details about that. If you want to know the all that went on, it was quite an experience last night. I did post an article, a blog about it on our site, thegallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net. So just search for the article called My All-Nighter with Tara and David Tennant. Well, anyway, long story short, which may be too late now, is that when David Tennant did come on to the radio, they spoke about his time in the U.S. and New Mexico, as opposed to Mexico, and that's a little inside story there, if you heard the radio broadcast. Well, David did remember Tara and actually spoke about her in the radio show, so let's hear a little bit of that right now. This is just a small segment of David Tennant's time on the show, so I believe Absolute Radio has made the whole entire interview available on their site. So Google it, Absolute Radio. I think it's absoluteradio.co.uk, something like that. They also said that they're also shot video of it as well, so there should be a video, which I haven't seen yet. I just heard it on the audio, so and there was a webcam too, so I did see it, but not video. By that, I mean the webcam was a series of stills that were transmitted via the internet. That's when it was working.
We're back together.
Where have you been this morning? Richie goes early at... No, apparently he's really excited, and this is the first interview he's doing today. Richie, do you know this is the second interview? He's already done another breakfast show. Wouldn't mind if it was daybreak.
I thought it was time we started seeing other people.
Unbelievable.
Is Matt Smith in tomorrow? Seriously, that guy is an amazing Doctor Who.
I'm not quibbling with that.
But you're not even speaking at the moment. What's up with you, man? How are you, DJ?
Oh, I'm very all the better for seeing you.
You're back.
Yeah.
Look at you. You're all American and snazzy.
Am I, though?
No, you are.
I've just not cut my hair, is all that's happened.
No, the hair's a bit different.
The hair's long, is what
it is. Emo.
Is this emo?
Look like you're 21. See, it doesn't look younger. The tan, the stubble. Yeah. What's going on with the stubble? Is it a fake one? I didn't think you could grow any kind of facial hair.
Yeah, I've been up at dawn having each hair individually laid into my face.
You look in rude health.
I'm in rude health, thank you, yes.
Have you been obviously working out in New Mexico?
Sure, me and the gym, you know how... You know.
Wow.
We love a bit of that. Yeah, New Mexico, I've been out there.
What's been going on out there? I know nothing about this, other than you got a text last week. I thought you were joking, saying you'd been in Mexico with vampires. Yeah, I was like, he's drunk. He's on tough times. He hasn't worked since Doctor Who last year. How sad. But you've been doing this Mexico...
I've been doing Fright Night.
Which was it's an 80s movie, wasn't it?
It's a remake of the 80s vampire film, yeah, for DreamWorks.
For DreamWorks?
Yeah.
Crikey, big boys now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And how long were you in Mexico for?
About 2 months. New Mexico. That's not Mexico.
What was the difference?
Don't embarrass yourself.
Really?
New Mexico's in America. It's a state.
I knew that.
It's one of the states of America.
Yeah.
You knew that.
Yeah, I did that deliberately.
For the listeners?
For the younger kids, just to sort of realise geographical mistakes you can easily make.
Yeah.
Now, we spoke to someone this morning called Tara, who you must have seen. She had a TARDIS tattoo done, a 6-inch one. She said she held up an iPad for you.
I know who you're talking about. I met her in the streets of Albuquerque.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, we spoke to her.
How was she?
She's really well, mate. She's staying up listening like a lot of the DT fangirls all over the world, especially in America now. They're staying up late. They're like a 7-hour time difference, so they can hear you right now.
I'm sorry to have kept you all. I hope it was worth it.
She said she was an extra for 3 days on Fright Night.
Oh, not in any of my scenes.
Oh, look at this, not in any of my scenes.
Oh, I didn't have any extras.
What do you mean? You were just working alone?
Pretty much. All my scenes are very contained.
What's your character in it, then? Are you a zombie?
I'm a Las Vegas illusionist.
I've got to see.
Yeah.
When's this out?
Yeah. I think it's next Halloween, I think. Or round about then, anyway.
Do you mean this Halloween?
No, next October.
What kind of a turnaround is that?
Come on, there's CGI to work on.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're like a kind of Paul Daniels vampire slayer. Is that the pitch? Is that what it says?
Paul Daniels vampire slayer.
Wisbit is now a vampire slayer.
Wisbit vampire killer. That's not a bad idea.
That's the movie to make.
That's a great idea.
Call DreamWorks back and say, I've got another one.
Paul Daniels vampire slayer. Let's do it.
With a lesbian Debbie McGee. I'll just leave it out there.
Yeah.
No one's saying anything.
Let's not comment on that. The lawyers are listening. That could be.
Well, how cool is that? So cheers to Tara for that. And a shout out to Absolute David Tennant fangirls that were out on Twitter that night in masses. It was a fun time. So without any further ado, let's go back in time to Gallifrey 21, where we interviewed Annika Wills.
And we're back at Gallifrey 21. Ken Deep, Lewis Trepanning, James Norton here with the lovely Annika Wills.
Thank you.
And anybody who listens to Doctor Who Podchuck knows that I have a very soft spot for the black and white era, and in particular, things that, like these missing episodes and stuff, which is just such a crying shame that so many of them are missing. And so, first, welcome, and are you enjoying your experience in Los Angeles?
Oh, yes. I've been here before. But so, in a way, and in fact, this is the third time, so... Doing the Who convention, so it feels like coming home. It's very nice.
I assume you get a warm welcome when you come here, right? Yeah. I mean, everybody's really excited.
They're all so warm anyway, you know.
Everybody's so mellow, isn't it? Yeah. And it just makes it so easy to come because it can be a bit intimidating, I suppose, right?
Well, when we did the opening ceremony and I climbed up on the stage and there were, I think, 1,400 people, I actually had never stood in front of so many people, so that was a moment to take. I actually just said, can I just take a moment to stand here and absorb this experience, you know, because it was extraordinary. And then you get tongue-tied and can't think of anything to say.
Can you take us back in time a little bit?
Okay.
Take us back to being cast in Doctor Who.
Yes.
Did you know that there would be a change in leading actor going into it, or is it...
No, we didn't know. The thing was that... actually, you know what's interesting? Because of the books, and because I've written my autobiography, going back, we discovered, you know, as the years go by, you forget. I actually was a very busy working actress, and I'd done a lot of, you know, quite serious dramas. So it wasn't as though I was a young actress coming out and then, boy, oh boy, getting a part in Doctor Who. But at the same time, getting a part in Doctor Who is a big thing, you know. I went running up and down my little street where I live, saying, ah! So that was, it was very exciting. My husband, Michael Goff, at the time, he'd already been in Doctor Who because he played the Celestial Toymaker. So he warned me that although it was going to be fun, Bill Hartnell was difficult to work with because he was already very, very, not very well and forgetting his lines and stuff and with a lot of rage and anger going on. So I went in knowing that although it was going to be great to be in the series Doctor Who, which was already so popular. At the same time, I was going to have to mind my P's and Q's and be careful of Bill Hartnell. So then when I first met lovely Michael Crowes, who was going to be my companion with me, that was lovely because the two of us could support each other when he went off on one, you know. So that, in fact, the atmosphere on the set was quite, I wouldn't say as strong as unpleasant, but it wasn't, wasn't relaxed. There was a lot of tension. But we found ways of getting around that, going to the BBC bar and getting drunk at lunchtime and stuff like that, you know, as we actors would do.
You told a wonderful story about when you got the news that Patrick Troughton was going to be the Doctor and that he was going to be your co-star.
Yes.
You had already been there. You and Michael were in the part already. You were helping that transition because everybody kind of knew that you were established as companions and Bill was leaving and then in comes Patrick Troughton. What do you do to welcome him into that part, or does it immediately become his series?
No, not at all. First of all, we didn't know who it was going to be, and we also didn't know whether, in fact, it was going to work to completely change. Because at first they were saying maybe we'll have a lookalike Bill Hartnell, we'll have an actor with a silver wig, and you know, just pretend that it's the same. So then they changed that idea and thought, no, he can regenerate. He could be somebody completely different.
And thank goodness they did.
So we didn't know because you know they never tell the actors what's going on. So we didn't know until we walked into the rehearsal room in the morning, Monday morning, and there's Patrick Troughton. Why did he come in his little red cardigan? And the whole rehearsal room went, yes, Patrick Troughton! Because, of course, we knew him as a brilliant classical actor. And he was very... I think, in a way, he was the least kind of egocentric of all the doctors. He was very humble. Having just met Derek Jacobi, Sir Derek Jacobi, he had the same quality of just real humbleness, you know, coming in and saying, hi, I'm Derek, you know. And it was the same with Patrick. He came in and he said, well, you know, I hope I can do a good job. Yes, sir. I mean, we just warmed to him at once. And what was very lovely was that he was bouncing off Mike and me and saying, what do you think, guys? So at one point, you know, this is in the book, at one point he was thinking about kind of Groucho Marxy sort of thing, and he had this idea of having a sort of gingery wig and everything, and immediately I said, that is absolutely god-awful, you can't do that. Listen, just come here, give me your comb. And I combed his hair like this. I said, you know, why don't you just do it like that, you know, like a sort of beetle wig. Okay, how could I possibly have known then that that would go into, you know, iconic history?
Of course, it's like his trademark,
you know,
practically.
But they all said, okay. And so in those first few stories and few weeks, we were becoming friends, and he was relaxing into finding the role. But he felt very responsible, you know, that he would get it right. And because, you know, what... So now, here we are, 40 years later or more, and here in LA. And if it hadn't been for Patrick Troughton way back then, I don't think we'd be sitting
no,
here.
No, yeah, that's something that we always say on our podcast, yes, that if it wasn't for Patrick Troughton, we wouldn't be here today doing what yeah, we're doing today.
Because he had just the right quality. And so, and also, so the, you know, so the British public at that time could take him to their hearts and say, okay, this is our new Doctor, you know.
He was different enough to make it exciting,
yes,
but he understood the fact that he was playing the same man. I mean, it's a subtlety, yes, that a lot of other people probably would have fouled up.
Yes.
And yes, he managed to pull it off.
And, of course, the scripts were so lovely when, you know, Polly being a girl, of course, sort of intuited, it's fine, it's the Doctor, don't worry. But Ben being a bloke and being in his head more, saying, I don't know, I'm not sure. And that was lovely to play, you know. So, yeah.
You mentioned in your book, too, that that fans want to know what you think, whether Ben and Polly ever hooked up. You know, he always called her the Duchess,
and he had
a fancy for you. So, yeah. But you think that they went their separate ways.
I think they were just very good friends. You know, I mean it's hard
because
to
it's an innocent show and
differentiate between Mike and me and Polly and Ben, because we were very good buddies. And when we re-met then, you know, so many years later, 94. I think was it the 30th, mm-hmm, 30th anniversary. I met him at the station. We were going to go up north to the convention, and I hadn't seen him from that day to this. He just said, hello, darling. Hello, Duchess. How are you doing, then, darling? And we sat on the train, chattering away, as though no time had gone in between. And that's how we were. We were very good buddies. So other people's projections of what Polly and Ben would be up to, I don't know.
It's interesting that the show's... Doctor Who's been on for over 45 years, and yet, no matter when you talk to an actor who's been in the show, there's this little bit of magic that goes on. Like you just said, that your relationship was picked up, the chemistry is natural. We just came off stage, we were talking about two people who were acting in 1996. Years later,
yeah,
same thing.
Yeah.
Is it the show? Is it the talent level? Is it just luck? How does that happen?
I don't know. You see, well, you know, I suppose in a way we were lucky. Ben, you know, Michael Craze and I got on very well. I could have had, you know, we could have been working with some arsehole. you know, it would have been difficult.
do you have... In those times, you were under such pressure because it was recorded as live.
I know.
And then there was... stories about if you weren't happy with something and there was a flub and you didn't yes, want to get away with it, you'd have to swear or something
yes,
like that.
That actually didn't really happen in Doctor Who so much, but it had happened in other serious dramas that I'd been doing, which we did all of them were live. So that was how I was trained, you know. I was trained from the age of 11, doing all these different little teleplays and things, to do it live. So you didn't know, we didn't know any other way. And whereas they would cut the Ampex tapes, which were very expensive, for a technical detail, but it had to be really serious, because I mean, I had been in shows where the sets were falling down, the cameras were in the wrong place, and you just continued. It was very exciting. God damn, it was so exciting, actually, because you really had to continue. But so the idea was that if you'd really messed it up and you weren't happy, you could swear, you could say oh or something, and then there'd be this ghastly silence in the studio, and then they'd say okay, cut the tape. But then, you know, you were in the doghouse. I mean, oh, you know, yeah, you felt so awful. So you only did that at very, very extreme
time.
Circumstances.
They were only allowed a certain amount of camera stops, right, at that time.
Yes, yes.
I think the fact that it's recorded live and that you had to work your way through it, it yes, made it more natural.
It made it so exciting.
Right? There isn't that scripted, I'll talk, then I'll stop, then you talk thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You have someone searching for a word, or fumbling or something, which yeah, is very natural, very human, yeah, and so to me it added to the believability of yeah, the whole thing,
yeah,
and purely coming from just being exposed to Doctor Who and not seeing other things from that time, I just take it as automatic that that's just the Doctor Who magic, you know, going on there,
yeah,
that made it believable.
Yeah.
You were in an era with such creativity. I mean, really, so many things going on at the time. It was the swinging 60s. It must have been absolutely wild, the BBC at the time.
Yes.
You tell in your book,
yeah,
and I've read your first book, but not your second book yet, but
yes,
in the first book, it deals primarily in the 60s, about this era of creativity. It was a revolutionary time,
yes,
and it seemed almost like the surroundings of everything that was going on in London at that time
yes.
only added to all this.
I know, because at one point, one of my very dear friends at the time was Peter Cook, the wonderful comedian and satirist. And so at one point I'm in rehearsals, and he's going to go to his first night of Bedazzled, the film that he made, and he invited me to go with him. And so I'd left the rehearsals at the end of the evening, end of the day, and Patrick and Mike and everybody, they all knew I was going off to Bedazzled, so I was saying, hey, you know, enjoy it really good. So then getting in my little taxi and going off and picking up Peter and going off to this wonderful, you know, premiere of this great film. And in the morning, back to rehearsals. How was it? You know, they were all a bit jealous, really, of the kind of the people that I met. And at the same time, during Doctor Who rehearsals, went to a party at Peter's, wearing my silver dress, met John Lennon. Heaven.
You talked in a book about a chance meeting with him, and I think in a kitchen,
yes.
right?
Yes. He was just yes. getting a bite. We were at this party, and I was wearing my silver dress because you know it was about sort of 4 inches long, the whole dress. But I wanted to be noticed. I wanted him to notice
me. And apparently
me,
he did.
And so no, what happened was that the party was going on upstairs, and I was going to take a little break, go down to the kitchen where all the food was laid out, wonderful feast. When I got into the kitchen, there was only John. And so that was a bit embarrassing, you know. What are you going to say? And he was so sweet. He said, "Hey, while the grown-ups are upstairs gasbagging and getting pissed, let's you and me eat some strawberries. What can you say?" But they were, okay.
Oh, that's fantastic. So and do you get a sense with someone like him that you're in the presence of someone extraordinary?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's awful because you're sort of tongue-tied and, you know, you can't think of anything to say. But he was just really sweet, actually. We didn't say much. We just ate strawberries together. That's so lovely and intimate.
It is. And rather than imparting some kind of words of wisdom or something, it was just such a simple little moment,
yeah,
right?
Moment, but I treasured it, of course.
Absolutely.
Yes. So that was all going on while one was working away doing Doctor Who. And I must tell you, the other thing was, of course, I was married at the time to Mick Goff, and with my two young children. So in the episode of the Macro Terror, and we were doing it live, of course. So I was away from home, and the children would sit and watch it. Not my son; he was too little, but my daughter was watching it with Mick. And then you see Polly's little boots sort of disappearing up into the mouth of this great crab, and Polly turns to her dad and says, "Is Mummy coming home tonight?"
That's brilliant.
Yeah. She didn't differentiate. Yeah. She just sees you up on television and doing your thing.
In the same way, another bit of magic, you see, earlier on, my younger brother, I was going to be on the telly, and my mother was saying, "Come on, sit down, because, you know, it's going to start." And my younger brother said, "That's all right, she won't start without me." So the lovely sort of, you know,
children are wonderful
of
like that, aren't they?
Yes.
Because that's in the kids' reality, that's the way it is, right?
Yeah.
You were invited to visit the set on the new Doctor Who?
How magic is it? After 40 years, they invited me to go and see the whole, you know, the whole thing. So that I'm walked back into the TARDIS set after 40 something years.
Did you take a picture?
Oh yeah, we took masses of pictures.
Did you see David Tennant?
So exciting. Then we went to see the whole thing, and then we went off to the location where they were filming, and they'd set this up. So we were down in a basement, and we had to wait because they were busy, and it was going to be this moment when he had a little break. Mm-hmm. And my heart was pounding. I was so excited to meet this man. And so then he comes walking over, and his whole face was just beaming, because afterwards they said, "He was made up to meet you, don't worry, you know."
Yes.
But and out of my mouth popped, "Doctor, it's so lovely to see you again after all these years."
And he just went, classic.
"Yah!" And so we had a big hug. It was wonderful, wonderful.
How does that come about? Like, do people on the production team just make a phone call?
No,
just gushing?
My publisher called and said she'd love to, you know, come. In fact, it was the day after there'd been a big concert, the Children in Need concert in Wales.
Yes. Okay.
So we went then, and that was when, and David Tennant leapt out on the stage in a good gold suit, and this entire auditorium, which is
screaming,
massive, absolutely went wild.
Like the Beatles all over again, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think a time like that'll ever happen again? Do you think that we've just passed that way of creativity of the 60s and the way things were just done?
It's changed, hasn't it, now? Because of the technology, this is the thing. So now it's expanded and it's extended and there's all these different aspects to it. But I personally think, you see, that it was more creative because it was much more simple. And when I talk to the young fans now, and they love the new series, I must tell you, I mean, the new series is astounding, but it's awfully quick, especially if you're getting older. It's awfully quick. You have to watch it a few times to gain it, to understand the story and absorb it all.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm talking to the kids now and coming up to my table, and they say, no, we like to go back now to see the old series. And I say, what do you like about them? And they said, because the stories are good.
Yes.
So the stories were really, really good.
And one of the things that I like, in particular in the era that you were in, is there's these gentle pauses throughout the show where, because the budget was low, because things were tight, you had to have some scenes where there's some characterization and so just very believable moments, like Polly getting the tea or the coffee, like something like that, or someone's changing. I'm going into the back, I have to change my coat. Which in today's show, unless it was a plot point, it would just kind of move by it. But these little moments, like the fluffs and the little stumbles, make it believable. It brought you in as if this was family.
Yes.
And so, from a viewer point of view, it really. That's what real people do. Real people don't have exciting moments second after second. They have a minute where they're doing this, and then later on it's exciting.
Yeah.
But it's fantastic that you had a chance to visit the new set, and I can tell you that I'm sure that he was just as nervous to meet you.
Isn't that amazing?
Because he's such a fan of the show, David Tennant.
He came, and then I want to gobble up all the attention, and I'm rabbiting it away to him, and of course I'm clasping his hands, and I'm going, and then the friends behind are saying, Annika, and us, I say, oh, sorry. And so he turns to them and says, hi. Hi, I'm David. No.
We know.
You know.
No introduction is necessary. Was he in the costume?
Very sweet. Yes, he was in the costume.
Which makes it even more fantastic.
It was, the early on stories. So, yes. I mean, later on, a couple of things with the new series. When it was the one that was, Are You My Mummy? And I'm sitting alone at home, and the sofa is against the wall, and I'm suddenly thinking, wait a minute, this is really scary. And I've got nowhere to hide, and I'm on my own, it's not fair. And other times,
On goes the lights.
When he comes leaping on the horse, in the
girl in the fireplace.
The girl in the fireplace. And he comes charging. I'm just sitting there on my own going, yay! This is astounding telly.
Wendy Padbury has a bit of a crush on him. Would you say you have a bit of a crush
massive.
On him?
Oh, yes.
Dr. Hottie, as my wife calls him, he's absolutely fantastic and just brings so much in addition. The girls like him, the guys want to be him, as Louise Page just said. It's just a fantastic doctor.
He's
and I'm
genuine.
So,
you see, the thing is, he's genuine.
I like Patrick.
Exactly. And when he talks to you, you're the only person in the room. That's it. He's talking, to you, and that's a very, very magic kind of quality. You can't make that up. That's genuine.
You're the most special person in the world at that moment.
Yeah.
Even though you know that everybody wants his attention, but he's not thinking about where he needs to be 10 minutes.
The other wonderful thing is that he said, please send me copies of your book. And I said, yeah, I will. Of course I will. So I sent, wrote a letter back. Thank you very much. Wonderful stories. He responds. He does that. He makes an effort to write to every fan. He does.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I'm a fan.
Yes, we're running out of time.
Yeah, we know that your time is limited. So thank you ever so much for talking to us. Thank you ever so much. Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks, guys. Lovely.
We'll be right back with more of Doctor Who Podshock after this. Podshock! No, I said in the past when we were reviewing the two-part Silurian story, this past series of Doctor Who, that it definitely had a feeling from the John Pertwee Third Doctor era of Doctor Who, that, you know, from the early 70s, it just had that vibe to it, not only because the Silurians were back, but just the overall storytelling and the themes that were present in those in the two-parter there. And the same might be true for Doctor Who, The Ring of Steel, which is an exclusive audio adventure by BBC Audio. It's written specially for audio by Stephen Cole, and it's read by Arthur Duvall, who plays Rory on Doctor Who. Ring of Steel features the Doctor, the 11th Doctor, as portrayed by Matt Smith. It's a fairly new release by BBC Audio, and it's going to be our pick or our suggestion for Audible, which is offering a free audiobook download when you try out their service. Audible is the leading provider of digital audiobooks. They have over 75,000 titles to choose from in every genre, be it thrillers, business, history, and science fiction and fantasy, plus so much more. Audible content is compatible with iPods, iPads, iPhones, MP3 players, over 500 devices for your listening pleasure anytime, anywhere, just like this podcast. For you, listeners of Doctor Who Podshock, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 14-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. To download your free audiobook today, simply go to audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/arttrap, A-R-T-T-R-A-P, for your free audiobook. Hey, are you driving? You can't write down that URL? No problem. It's on our website, gallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net. You should have those already bookmarked. Just go to our website and click on the ads for Audible for this offer. Now, Doctor Who, The Ring of Steel, as I said, is written by Stephen Cole and is narrated by Arthur Duvall. When the TARDIS lands on Orkney in the near future, the Doctor and Amy arrive to find a large demonstration in progress over construction of new electricity pylons. The Doctor tries to break things up peacefully, but suddenly the road splits open without warning and swallows police, security guards, and protesters alike. Separated from the Doctor, Amy takes charge of transporting the wounded to hospital. But the rescue mission becomes a terrifying ride as pylons come to life and begin to walk the road as the road rears up, erupting with boiling tarmac. The Doctor, meanwhile, has even more than metal monsters and rebellious roads to deal with. Who is sucking the life out of the power company's employees? And just what is lurking inside the AstraGen headquarters? Here's a little bit from it right now.
Cards made it clear what the protest was about. Save our landscape. No to pylons. Don't pylon the misery. Lined up on the road were 10 security guards, holding batons and wearing dark-visored helmets. They were facing off 30-odd protesters gathered on the verge, all chanting loudly. Cable is stable. Pylons disable. Tension thrummed through the air like power in the overhead wires. The Doctor went charging into the middle of the crowd. The security guards did not react. Lovely tune. Not sure about the lyrics, he announced. Cable is stable? Bit obscure. You mean use underground cable to carry the energy instead of pylons? Course we do, said a large man, made larger still by several layers of woolly jumper. He had a bushy red beard and little hair on top. They don't have to put up those steel monsters here. Are you from AstraGen? A woman jeered. Flown in by company helicopter? Nah, said another. Look at those clothes. He's got to be protesting like us. Well? A small, wiry girl demanded. Which side are you on? The people not getting hurt side. I'm the Doctor, and I don't want to hurt your resident poet, but pylons disable? What's that about? Fenwood came up with that, the girl told him proudly. It's good. The large, jumpery man blushed. It's just saying eyesores like that restrict the enjoyment of millions who come here to get away from technology and the rat race and all of that. Some of us are locals, a woman said stoutly. We're sick of AstraGen vandalizing the islands and never being held to account. They think they're above the law. Right. They've been building illegally all over the place, A tall man pointed at the construction workers still busy in the upper reaches of the new pylon.
And if those idiots don't climb down here within the next 10 seconds, we'll bring them down, along with their oversized mechano kit. No need for that, Thinwood said uneasily. They're just working to feed their families. It's their bosses who need to listen. Come on before the coppers turn up, yelled the Aberdeen man. Bring down that pylon! Bring it down!
The protesters chanted as they surged forward.
Bring it down!
Doctor? Amy shouted, caught up in the crowd. She saw him hold up his hands as though to ward the protesters off. Then a waved placard struck him under the chin and knocked him to the ground. Thinwood stooped to try and help him, but was bowled over as the security guards jerked into sudden life, swinging fists.
And that could be yours as your free audiobook download. Remember, to download your free audiobook, go to audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/arttrap, A-R-T-T-R-A-P, for your free audiobook.
What's that? It's a sonic screwdriver. Never fails.
Drop the sonic device.
Isn't my day, is it?
Even the sonic screwdriver won't get me out of this one.
Are you seeking Doctor Who news? The Sonic News Driver. Selected Doctor Who-related news stories delivered sonically. All in a bite-sized podcast. No bigger than a jelly baby.
Function of the sonic blaster, a sonic cannon, and a triple enfolded sonic disruptor.
Doc, what you got?
I've got a sonic... Oh, never mind.
What?
It's sonic. Okay, let's leave it at that.
Disruptor, cannon, what?
It's sonic. Totally sonic. I am sonic to all.
A sonic what? Screwdriver!
The Sonic News Driver. Find it on iTunes or go to sonicnewsdriver.com.
Who has a sonic screwdriver?
I do!
The Sonic News Driver. Get yours today, sonically.
Neat, isn't it?
So we're back with Doctor Who Podshock. I'm James with Lewis and Ken, in case you haven't realised.
That's so funny.
I mean, because I'm just having a good time.
Oh. Ken's laughing at my incredibly cheesy voiceover, but hey-ho. So we're going to go straight into some feedback now, and we're going to have a bit of volley between me and Lewis. Lucy's going to take care of the audio feedbacks, and I'm going to cover the emails.
And I'm going to go hit the bar.
Indeed. Be yourself up, mate. Get on the old fight against sobriety, as we were talking about before. Anyway, hey guys, this is an email from a chap called Kevin in Swansea. He says, thanks for a very enjoyable podcast number 221. Now that my blood has returned to its correct temperature, I must take James to task
over
his unashamed party political broadcast on behalf of the television license fee, or the teletax as we like to call it. James wonders why so many people refuse to pay the fee. Easy. It's an unfair tax, so in the interests of balance, please let me explain why. I'll try to be as brief as possible, as I know you don't do long emails. Basically, the license fee is a tax on the ownership of a television set, with all the proceeds going to the BBC, who are not only the broadcasters in the UK. If you don't watch any BBC output, you still have to pay for the fee under large threat of large fines or imprisonment. Does that sound familiar to you guys in the States? In my case, I only watch the BBC when Doctor Who is on, 13 weeks of the year. I'm a big sports fan. I pay Sky TV my £40 a month to watch all of my sports, which is my choice. I can always cancel. And then I'm billed an extra £130 or so, which I cannot cancel to fund a service I rarely use. How unfair is that? £130 to watch 13 episodes of Doctor Who? It's cheaper to wait and buy the DVDs. If I can quote Jeremy Paxman, a respected political and current affairs presenter on the BBC, the idea of a tax on ownership of a television belongs in the 1950s. Why not tax people for owning a washing machine to fund the manufacture of Persil soap powder? In this digital age, the BBC should make a subscription service. Then if people want to their fix of Doctor Who, EastEnders or Top Gear, then they have no alternative but to take out a subscription and pay. This will sort out the problem of the non-payers, and it's much fairer to viewers who have no interest in BBC output. Finally, I take James's comment that 130 quid is nothing with great offence. It's a lot of money if you haven't got it, mate. To a lot of people, there are more important priorities in life than stumping up cash to fund the BBC. Keep up the good work, guys, and I'm sorry for the rant. Kevin in Swansea. Thanks for that, mate. Well, everybody has their own opinion, of course. I'm a huge fan of the BBC and of the licence fee, and I think it's very well justified. Of course, there are many people who don't agree with me and think that they should spread the cost, and there's a huge debate going on in the UK right now as to whether even they should share the licence fee between stations, for example, the BBC and Channel 4, which is part publicly funded, and all sorts and
well, are there
so
commercials
and so forth.
Are there commercials on Channel 4 or ITV?
There are commercials on every other station apart, or every other channel apart from the Beeb, yes.
To me, the idea of having a channel or multiple channels now, in BBC's case, that are publicly funded, even if it's taxed like that, is very appealing. There's no commercials, and hopefully that allows to maximize its neutrality.
Sure.
And speaking from an American with American television, is I can understand his point that, yes, we don't have to pay that tax here, which...
But we don't pay that tax like that. We do... public television is partially funded by National Endowments of the Arts, and that's... Mm-hmm. So that there's a little public funding goes into that, but it's not... But it's not a mandatory tax. When you get like a TV that you have to pay, whatever. It's just
our ads are relentless.
They are, and that's one of the reasons why I'm such a massive fan of the BBC. Because with Sky, for instance, which Kevin is referencing, which is a satellite television service, you pay a subscription. So Kevin pays 40 quid a month. So he's paying £40 a month effectively to watch television. And yet he still has a phenomenal amount of adverts. And that's why I'm such a huge fan of the Beeb, because I've been to the States many times. It's a fantastic place. But the television there just drives me insane, because it's like...
It drives us insane.
Yeah,
it's
try living here.
Minutes. And the thing which... It was a huge culture shock for me, aside from the sheer volume of adverts and pop-ups and all the rest of it, was the fact that you have... adverts in between the opening credits and the start of the show, and you have adverts in between the end of the show and the credits, and the
and often they're the same adverts.
And they're just rising the same up the wall. Adverts, yeah,
they'll have a lower third advert for something coming up, and then they'll go right into a commercial for it. And like, well, that's it's just too much. But, you know, that's why I'm a big fan of other, you know, ways to watch television, you know, be it the Apple TV or Roku boxes or Boxy or whatever, you know, where you can just stream your own content or, you know, have your own media center. Yeah. There's just other options available. I mean, Kevin, who had wrote to us about this, I understand his point of view as well. If you're in the UK and you buy a TV and you have no interest in the BBC whatsoever and you plan to get your content elsewhere, you're being charged, you know, for the BBC, even if you're not going to watch it at all. I mean, I understand part of that. It's just, but you know, here in the U.S., if you live, if you're a tax-paying citizen in the U.S., you're paying for public schools, regardless if you have children or not going there.
Yeah,
Or hospitals, regardless of whether or not you're ill, or the fire department, or any form of what the Republicans in the States, I believe, and particularly the Tea Party, regard as socialism.
Yeah, well, I don't know taxes about
the
hospitals,
but the fire department, yes, and the police.
Taxes are the admission charge to a civilized society.
I like that. That's a great quote.
And your license fee might be your admission to keeping the quality standards high, because while the Beeb are putting out quality shows, it forces the commercial stations to raise their level, because if yes. they put out crap, people are going to go, well, I'll just watch the BBC.
Yeah, and it has to be said that the Beeb, it's the biggest broadcaster in the world, and most of the top people in Britain who work in the television industry work for the BBC, and in doing so, they take a massive, massive pay cut compared to what you'd get in the private sector working for somebody like Sky or whoever else. But they do it because they know that with the BBC comes prestige, because they have standards. And in my view, I'd rather pay 130 quid a year than 50 or 60 pounds a month to Sky or whatever to watch rubbish. And I understand Kevin's point of view exactly. And I'm so that's why I'm so thrilled that the Beeb are going to do this subscription-based service. And I hope that maybe they will, even through that, because it's the way all television is going, through that they may well scrap the license fee. They may be able to make enough money just from the revenue on online to make films and dramas and so on, all the rest of it, and fund the Beeb without the need for a television license. Who knows? I mean, it's true that it is a very archaic thing. When, you know, it was invented when in the UK there was only one channel.
And they were using the license fee not only to produce programs, but they were building a studio and they were putting up transmission facilities and they were trying to get television launched in an entire country. So yes, there was certain aspects of it early on, and yes, there may be more creative ways to do it. And I one thing I will sympathize with is, what if you just simply don't have it? You know, what if it's a choice between paying the tax or, you know, making ends meet. And so I don't mean to make it sound like it's something that I'm dismissing. I'm just saying that there are, just as much as that's the case, there's also the case to be made that there's some benefit to it. And James hit the nail on the head. I think it keeps the standards high. I think that's probably the best case you can make for it. Mm. And coming from, looking at American television, you look at HBO is probably the channel with some of the most popular shows. And the reason that people are attracted to it is because they're not worried about selling soap. They're making shows and putting them on there, and there's no restrictions on what they can do. And so it attracts the best creativity.
Mm. You're not constrained in any way. You can do what you want.
And that's a paid channel. Mm. And people are willing to pay for it in order to have the quality shows.
Mm. Well, that's where Torchwood is going now, is premium television stars.
Mm. Mm. Which is a shame, but, I'm sure that Russell wouldn't do, as Ken says in Russell We Trust, but I'm sure that Russell wouldn't do anything that he didn't think was right for the show. Equally.
Well, I'm sure he's enjoying the creative freedom that it offers, as far as no restrictions on, content, and
yeah, that's
exactly.
There's a flexibility that he's used to, that he will have, being that he doesn't have to hold, fit it into the standards that a broadcast service would want.
Mm. And also, we have to remember with respect to the Beeb, is that it's not just television, it's all the radio that they do as well. It's all their online services, the fact that you don't have to, the Times and a whole host of other newspapers now are wanting to charge you, basically anything that's owned by Rupert Murdoch wants, to charge you to use their online services because they don't want news to be free. Whereas the Beeb, you don't have that problem. It's always going to be free, and it's always.
I hope that Fox charges for news. I really do. I hope they charge for news.
It would be about time.
You would like any other fiction, you'd have to pay for it.
Any other skewed perspective, you've got to pay for it. There we are. There we go. Anyway, I guess we've ranted enough about that. Kevin's
now I'm on the Fox News blacklist.
As if you weren't already.
Sympathizer Ken Deep.
Oh dear, that's it. They're gonna. We're gonna have private investigators searching into our past lives and things. And
I should be that important that they would rummage through my crap.
Well, if it's good enough for Scientology, if that's what they want to do, just because somebody's called them a cult, you know, then it's probably good enough for Fox News.
Okay, we have
anyway,
more feedback. Come on,
before we all, you know, get killed off.
There was some Doctor Who in this podcast somewhere.
I don't know where it is. Let's see it. Maybe it's in one of these.
Materialized long ago.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get back to more feedback. And next up is some voicemail coming into the Doctor Who Podchuck public call box. And this is Brent from Raleigh. And
hey guys, this is Brent from Raleigh again. I had a couple of things to say real quick. One was congratulations on your 25th anniversary and also your 5th anniversary of the show. And I've been listening about 2 years now when I first got into the podcast listening thing. And I think you were the first one I picked up. So I've been listening for a couple of years. So, and I always enjoy it. And I know sometimes people complain about the long 2-hour episodes, but those are my favorite because I listen to them at work and it just passes the time really quickly. The other thing, I just listened to your review of Deadly Assassin, and I wanted to say James made a comment about watching how fun it was to watch Doctor Who, old Doctor Who, through the eyes of a new fan. And that happened to me last weekend. We have a local meetup group here in Raleigh, and we had a big, long 8-hour Doctor Who marathon. And each person that was invited was allowed to choose one of their own episodes. And so I chose Legopolis Part 4, and I thought it was going to be like a whole bunch of old episodes with a few new ones thrown in, and actually it was the reverse. The majority of people that were there were new series fans, and it was a bunch of mostly Tenet episodes. There were a lot of people there that had just started watching the series over the past few years, and when they watched Legopolis and when they watched Somebody Had Brought Part 10 of the War Games, and you could just see their faces. They were all excited and wanted to know what was going on, and they wanted to catch up and everything. And it was just really cool watching it through their eyes. But anyway, just wanted to call in and make a comment. Talk to you guys later.
Yeah, very good.
Cool. Cheers for that, mate. It's always good to hear that that more people are being introduced to the classic show. Because it really is, I think it's testament to how brilliant the show is that, you know, you've got so many new fans of New Who, or for want of a better phrase, and so it's always great to sort of drag them into classic Doctor Who and show them where things started and how things started, and how it carried on for ever such a long time and was hugely successful. So there we are.
And thank you, Brent, for your thoughts about
your kind words,
about
indeed.
The 25th and 5th anniversaries. We're getting old here. we need a Gallifreyan walking stick now. Yeah, the years go by quicker than we can imagine, and I know for James, myself, and Ken, the past 5 years doing Doctor Who Podchuck has really flown by, and it's just it's hard to believe it's been a half decade now that we've been doing this.
Maybe we'll still be here in a decade. And what's
the
decade
length of these episodes? Yes, we will.
I'm just still doing this one episode.
225 will be out, and that'll be coming out in 2020.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing we don't do a live show, you know, going out streaming, which will never end.
It will never end. I wanted to give a quick shout out to the Tin Dog, who sent me a really lovely email. I had tweeted that I was going to be moving relatively soon at the end of the year, and he said a nice little congratulatory message and saying it's a shame that I'm moving away from Yorkshire, because he's from further up north, but he's living in and around Yorkshire these days. So that was really, really cool of him. So thanks mate, that's great to hear from you.
Yeah, cool. that's Michael, a.k.a. the Tin Dog from the Tin Dog podcast.
That's absolutely right. A wonderful chap. Splendid chap, all of them.
All of them.
So it goes for all the podcasts.
All the marks. Well, the K9 all Marks the 1, Mark 2, Mark 3.
Everywhere.
All right. Well, we have more coming in at the on the call box. And this is Steve from New Jersey.
Hello, Dr. Who Podshock. This is Steve from New Jersey. Just calling in to say you got a great show. And I just recently heard that Katie Manning, Joe Grant from John Pertwee era, is going to guest star on the Sarah Jane Adventures. I was wondering if you guys had any news about that, and possibly if and when you find out when the Sarah Jane Adventures might be shown here in the U.S. Take care.
Unfortunately, there's no news as to when Sarah Jane. I think we only had the first season. We didn't even get.
Okay, I'm sorry. Coming in the U.S. I'm sorry. Never mind.
Here in the U.S. And in the U.K., it's going to start airing in October
11th, the day after our live show in New York Comic Con.
And I think the one with Katie Manning is going to be the 5th and 6th, kind of like what they did last year with the David Tennant one, somewhere in the middle.
And it's more than just a cameo. She's actually, it's not just
there's
like
there's a clip of her in it, which I don't know if you saw it online.
The classic going down the corridors and
and that one also has Matt Smith in it as well, and it's called, spoiler here, although it's the title, it's The Death of the Doctor.
Yes, I think it's
the title of it, and they're doing two-parters again, like they did last year, right?
They well, always
all of
do.
Them are,
that's yeah, right.
That's their standard.
That's a great idea.
They always do two-parters for one story. So, if there's 10 episodes, there's 5 stories. Though I think this series they're doing 12, so there's going to be 6 stories.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that's right, and it's just great that they're going to have Sarah Jane, Joe Grant, and the Doctor.
And then Matt Smith, I know.
Single.
Some wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff going on.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about this is, as well, is that they're actually having a preview of the episode, Death of the Doctor, which is going to be showing on Tuesday the 12th of October at 8 p.m. in NFT1. On London South Bank.
That's a cinema, right? That's a theater.
Yeah, you have to go and pay to see it. It's £9 for adults. Concessions are £6.65, but they're available from the BFI website. Or you can call, if you're in the UK, 020-7928-3232. Or their website is tickets.bfi.org.uk. So there you go.
Are you going, James?
It's a little bit out of my way, unfortunately. Otherwise, I would. If it wasn't on a Tuesday, when I'd have to work on the Wednesday, I'd definitely be up for it, and I'd go down and see it, because Sarah Jane is always a real hoot. I love it. It's really lighthearted, and I love the fact that they're being two-parters. It feels kind of a bit like classic Doctor Who, because every week you have a cliffhanger. Yeah. So,
and it's smart the way they pair. They you don't wait the whole week. They do the back to back episodes. I think it's a great idea.
And since they're half hour shows, it's another similarity to Doctor Who of old.
Yeah, it's got a lot of the classic feel to it.
And this is interesting because you have two companions that were under the same Doctor originally, and they one took over from the other.
And then the current Doctor, who neither one of them have met yet.
Yes.
Yeah, and he's apparently going to die.
Yeah. Mm.
So we're looking forward to that, and be sure to listen to Doctor Who Podchak when that episode comes out, because we'll, obviously since the Doctor's in it, it's definitely Doctor Who related. So
so we're going to be reviewing it.
Yes. All right, well.
All right, cool. Next.
I think James has another piece of feedback.
Just one more. It was just to give a shout out to Jeff Roney over at menadum.info. That's dumb with a B. He very kindly sent us an ident, a podcast ident. He's a nice chap, And it's always nice to get an email from whoever they may be. They don't even necessarily have to be Doctor Who related. It's just always good to hear that there are other people out there who are listening to the show.
Hello, this is Jeff Roney from the Men Are Dumb and I Should Know blog at menaredumbwithab.info. And you are listening to Doctor Who Podshock.
So there we go.
Oh, very good. Well, finally, we have another piece of audio feedback. This is going back and further back in time in our... We still have more feedback to get to, so we'll eventually get to more. But this is...
You say that every week.
Well, we endeavor to get to them all. All right, so this is Courtney, and this is her comments about our podcast, or about podcasts in general.
Hi, my name is Courtney, and I'm leaving a message for Podshock. I kind of have a fairly complicated relationship with Doctor Who podcasts, mainly because the biggest ones are boys clubs, and it kind of shows. And so I love Doctor Who, and I want to be a part of the fan community, but when I heard the latter half of episode 190, the latest one, I kind of considered not listening anymore. It's always really small things, but it's small things all the time, and so I thought I'd actually call in about this one, because it's indicative of a really particularly annoying trend in Doctor Who fandom right now. When talking about the 11th Hour, Darth Skeptical said that at some moments Karen Gillan overacts a bit, and then said, but who cares, because she's gorgeous, and most of the time she hits the right notes anyway. And I actually rewound to make sure that I heard that right, because the worst part is that no one called him out on it. There were at least three or four people listening, and no one stopped and said, hey, her looks have nothing to do with her acting ability. And I imagined that if somebody had said something similar about David Tennant or Matt Smith, if Darth had said, for example, sometimes Tennant overacts, but who cares because he's gorgeous and most of the time he gets it right, there would have been some reaction. Because we all can see what a stupid statement that is when it's about a man. Unfortunately, plenty of Doctor Who fans think the most important feature of Gillan's performance is her short skirt. And it's really frustrating as a female fan. And particularly as a Tennant fangirl, plenty of female fans who sort of found Tennant hot were taken down a peg in the Doctor Who fan community not that long ago, sort of accused of not liking the show for the right reasons or for being silly, sex-obsessed women who aren't really true fans. But when Karen was cast, suddenly it's open season on the objectification of women, which ranged from the sort of fairly harmless to really deeply disturbing. And all that isn't to say that we should object male and female characters of Doctor Who equally, unless equally means not at all. If Karen Gillan is good at this role, and I think she is, she's good because she's got the right chemistry with Matt and because her acting is great, not because she looks good in a skirt. And so while we can all notice that she looks good in a skirt, it's kind of important to be critical of the things that we say about her. And frankly, I don't think the comment would have gone unnoticed if male voices weren't so privileged in the fan community and the more popular Doctor Who podcasts like yours. Episode 190 was clearly supposed to be, for example, an episode with a wide range of voices and reactions to the 11th Hour, and I didn't hear one woman for an hour and a half. And I think your listeners missed out about it. For example, I really enjoyed the interview you guys did with the women who edited the Chicks Take Time Lords. And I think that most of the podcast could be improved by some more female voices, because that was a really great episode. And I just feel like there's not really a very big range on Podcheck and on the other more popular Doctor Who podcasts. But I do really enjoy your show, so I hope that you guys can take that comment critically, but I really do enjoy it. Every time that you guys publish a Podshock, I listen to it and really feel like I'm still part of the community through it. So thank you for doing a good job, and bye.
Well, you are part of the community, and we will make it a point to be less one-sided like that. And we have Amy and Tara and several female correspondents, and so we try to give that kind of balance in the community. And she's absolutely right. If I think being boys and whatnot, we're a little distracted with the way Karen Gillan dresses
in
the show.
I think she acts marvelously. I always admire her acting ability. But then again, I'm not the typical male listener.
And she's right that she has great chemistry with Matt Smith, and that's probably the most important part about what we want in a companion is the chemistry with the Doctor.
Absolutely. And we take the criticism on board very well. But I think if you're male or female or whoever you are, I will never, ever call you out, and I'll never, ever say, oh, it's wrong for you to say you know what? David Tennant, he's a bit of a hottie, or Billy Piper, I quite like her, or whatever. Because that is kind of it's not the sole appeal of the show, and I agree it should never be the sole appeal of the show. But it is, you can't deny that it's part of the appeal. And I should also state that the opinions of Darth Skeptical are not in any way the opinions of Podshock, the whole sort of legal disclaimer, you know.
Well, that goes with any person that calls into the show as well. And then during the live shows, it's really equal to anyone that wants to participate. So you just get yourself in the queue, and that's the order they're taken. The only difference is that, you know, Dr. Upachak supporting subscribers will be bumped up in the queue, but the order is still the same. So you get yourself in the queue right away, whether you're male or female, it doesn't matter. We always...
Exactly. We would love to have more ladies on the show, because I completely agree with Courtney. There aren't enough vocal female fans.
And I'm going to ask Courtney to keep our feet to the fire on it. And so how about
exactly
during our live shows, we have regular callers that are always, you know, that are always on every episode, it seems. You know, Helen Lesser is one of them. Ramana, mm-hmm. too.
Sam.
Have been calling. And, you know, so those are just two regular callers that are there all the time. There are other, you know, female callers as well. But it's, you know, again, we don't filter anyone out. Everyone's welcome. It's an open forum for everyone to participate.
We need more. Lovely.
And, you know, suddenly feeling defensive, but, you know, we've also inspired a few ladies to go about.
Yes, they've been doing very good
podcasts and having their voice be heard, which is great. And
that's Women in Sci-Fi, right? That podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Women Talk Sci-Fi. Australia.
They have an interview lined up with Michael Dorn, who plays Worf. They've been doing some incredible stuff lately.
They have. Yeah.
And that was something that they felt inspired by the podcast. But Courtney, you're absolutely right. And don't let us get away with any crap.
Absolutely. Call us out on it. That's what we're
here. This is Deep Does Not. I can assure you of that. Although, very in good. Fairness, she called David Tennant Dr. Hottie. So
there you go. Well, nobody, both male, female, whatever, however they classify themselves, is gonna deny that David Tennant has a good looking chap and has a following because of it. But
you know,
there's nothing wrong with that.
Every doctor does. Matt Smith. I think Matt Smith is a good
same with Matt Smith. Same with Christopher Eccleston. Just to quote the new Who guys.
Same and with John Pertwee. Same with Tom Baker.
It was
Baker,
the same with all
Peter
a lot
Davison.
Of the doctors in the classic era. You know, they all have their appeal because, you know, they're smart and you know, they're all been very handsome chaps. It has to be said. Which is why I know that I'm sadly never going to be in line to play the Doctor.
Oh, you're being too modest, James.
I'll have to regenerate first, then might be in with a
now
chance.
We're going to get legions of mail coming in about that. 40,000.
Over
40,000, yes.
All right,
we're going to play. Before we're going to insert the sexy James promo here now.
Oh, good Lord, no!
And before oldie but a goodie, yes.
Too much of a beating. Why don't we close up?
This is James from Doctor Who Podshock. It is very, very early in the morning. And I am up and about. What am I doing up so early?
Hello.
It's nice that we have a sex symbol on the show.
It's the Buccaneer look. Little dash of pirate and just a tweak of President Schwarzenegger.
Excellent.
Ladies, your viewing figures just went up.
As always, it's been a lot of fun.
I gotta go meet a girl.
There's a time and a place.
Bone show.
James, thank you so much for being part of the show.
You got an excellent bottom, too.
So thanks for listening, everyone.
Yes.
And we'll catch you in 225.
Or sooner. Whatever that means.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hey, before we go, we have a special offer for you. If you are a podcaster or a blogger or both, and it seems like everyone in our audience seems to be more and more these days, one of them or both of them, it's not too late to save on a registration for this year's Blog World and New Media Expo in Las Vegas, October 14th through 16th. You won't want to miss it if you are a podcaster or a blogger or involved in social media, web TV, or radio. If you go to arttrap.com/BWE15, that's BWE15, that's BWE as in Blog World Expo, and 15 as in 15% that you'll be saving on your registration. There's a special link there set up for you. I know the dates are coming up quickly, but if you want to attend the world's largest new media conference and expo, why not save 15% off the registration as well? Also, remember to check out our website, thegallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net, where you can stay on top of all Doctor Who news and information. And speaking of blogs, I have a blog there, as well as Graham Sheridan, our correspondent in Germany, a.k.a. the Second Doctor. He's always posting to it, so check it out on our website, gallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net. You'll also find our forums and polls, and it's a great way to stay informed on Doctor Who in between Doctor Who Podshock episodes. Remember, you can send us your feedback by using the Podshock public call box by calling 206-600-6517. Remember, that's a 206 area code in the U.S. Once again, the number is 206-600-6517. Please keep your feedback down to a couple minutes so we can use it on the show. That's the Doctor Who Podshock public call box. You can also record your feedback and send it to feedback@podshock.net. Until next time, cheers, everyone. You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented by the fan-run GallifreyEmbassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible in part by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This show is also supported by the Podshock Companion app for the iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch, now available in the iTunes App Store for $2.99.
Doctor, wakey, wakey, it's all over now.
What did you say, Michael? It's all over. That's what you said. It isn't all. It's far from being all over.
I must get back to the TARDIS. Immediately.
All right, Doctor.
Let's go now.
Well, are we going to go back and say goodbye or anything?
No. No, I must go at once.